But, you know, for you, I've known you for years.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I guess there's a couple reasons why I wanted to talk to you. One is that it's just very interesting to me that the Ottman that I met in college, not that I couldn't have seen you in this place now,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't have predicted it,
mm-hmm.
you know. The other thing is, I think it's a phenomenal thing. And obviously, it's caught on, and I see it on Facebook or, you know, it's been on the news and stuff. I think it's a phenomenal thing that you've gotten these concepts like meditation and yoga, mindfulness, which to me are very, come from a certain kind of population, people mm-hmm. maybe with some like privilege or opportunity or awareness to do those things. And you brought them into our city with kids and men who I think maybe stereotypically wouldn't seek out those things for themselves. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And so the other thing is in Filipino martial arts, our teacher would always talk about how, you know, one of the main influences in Filipino martial arts is like an Indian, there's like an Indian culture influence in the Philippines as a people. But also,
yeah, Kali is a god.
Yeah, it is. And there's a relation to that.
Mm.
But, you know, the old, I guess like in ancient times or whatever, the Indian warriors would use yoga as like their conditioning and strengthening and balance to all the battle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there also is a connection. And there's a lot of martial artists and whoever that practice a lot of yoga. So I know there's kind of everywhere and nowhere at once.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, if you don't mind, like, not that we need to start from the beginning per se,
mm-hmm.
but how did this even happen?
Alright, so you're recording already?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the way that I guess we got introduced to like yoga and mindfulness is you. Our parents, we like to label them as like hood hippies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're from the hood, but my parents were into a lot of like, alternative lifestyle type of things, especially, you know, invoking those tools into their kids,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be veganism before veganism was cool, we were doing meditation before we would go to school. Our parents sent us to a friend school where, you know, it's mindfulness-based practices intertwined throughout their entire day. They have, like, meeting for worship where all the students kind of sit in silence, and if you get moved to say something, you can stand up and say something. And then one of their main philosophies is the fact that you need to take a pause before you do anything. So yeah, that's a big thing in the practice, you know, being responsive and not reactionary.
Uh-huh.
So and then we went to like a non-denominational church. I forgot the exact name of the church, but it was like a non-denominational church where they spoke from a lot of different spiritual texts, started their service with like a meditation while sandalwood incense were playing. So, you know, they kind of planted a lot of seeds as far as contemplative practices. But after our parents separated, a lot of those contemplative practices fell by the wayside besides us attending friend school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we kind of got out of our practice for years. You know, we started eating like chicken and fish, yeah. you know, stuff like that.
Was it weird for you, like, as when you were growing up, was it, I mean, I can only imagine, like, probably not a lot of other kids were doing those kinds of things. So, did you and Ali, did you think it was weird, or were you just like, this is just what we do, this is our family, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it was just normal for us, but we knew that none of the other kids from our neighborhood were doing it,
mm-hmm.
and they already made fun of us for going to friend school in Baltimore. That's, like, during the time when, that I think was Houdini's song, Friends, how many of us mm-hmm. have them. So whenever we would come home from school, our whole group of friends would just start singing that. So they would burn us up for having so much homework mm-hmm. or speaking a certain way. So we didn't want to give them any more ammunition. And they knew we couldn't eat sugar or salt or any of that
really?
Other stuff. Yeah, like, yeah. And
that's like real healthy.
They were conscious. They were like, yeah, they were like, during the time when my brother and I were born, there were a lot of like, yoga retreats and meditation centers and, you know, Ayurvedic cooking classes out there. They were really into, you know, knowledge of self and eating right and living right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, like at the time, you know, we got made fun of. Like right now, if we were into that stuff, we'd be the hippest kids in school there is. You know, like all the hip kids are vegans and, you know, practicing yoga and meditation. So, yeah, it was different. It was like a different experience. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why we went back to that community is because it did make a difference in us growing. We may have been in that neighborhood, but we weren't of it. You know what I mean? Because we had a lot of different other experiences that increased our scope. Yep. Whether it's like the different enrichment activities that were offered at Friends to like all the contemplative practice that we got exposed to. So that's why we're doing what we're doing in our community is, you know, giving these things to kind of increase the Ali and I scope. And we know that could help any human being out that the kids aren't getting in the hood. And trying to, you know, show them why it's important, show the kids why it's important to learn these skills and, you know, and to increase their scope, but then also show, I guess, funders, educators and stuff like that what it takes to thrive in, you know, horrible situations, because most of the kids that we work with live in, like, you know, drug impacted neighborhoods or a lot of boarded up houses. You think it'd be like a wartime, you know, neighborhood, and it really is, because it's so many people dying all the time that they know. So they're like always, you know, we learned a little bit about neuroscience where they're talking about like the autonomic nervous system and how them being in that stressful situation and identifying where their dominant sympathetic side of their autonomic nervous system over time stresses them out and creates like a lot of health issues. But if the kids have tools to kind of activate that autonomic side of their the parasympathetic side of their nervous system, that in the, which some of the practices do, they can kind of be in those situations but not take damage from their nervous system being in there. You know, they can kind of like manage the chaos that they're in.
Definitely. You know, one of my teachers, he would always, you know, Pamanato and Chris Iyer, he would always talk about how when we get older, when we grow up and we have the means, many of us, we look to kind of fill a void that we had when we were kids. So he would always give this example of how when they were growing up, they were poor. And so whenever they had, and he had lots of brothers and sisters. So whenever they made spaghetti and meatballs, there would literally be just one meatball. Mm. And they'd either fight for the meatball or they'd have to cut it up. And now that, you know, as he got older and became successful, he would always tell us, he's like, so now for my kids, when we have spaghetti and meatballs, there's too many meatballs. It's like filled with meatballs. There's barely any spaghetti. Mm-hmm. And he talked about that. And I think, you know, he'll talk about how if there was a toy like Transformer or something that you always wanted when you're a kid and you never had, you know, when you get older, that's the thing. You want that for yourself. I mean, there's plenty of adults like that, and there's people that will do that for their kids. But in your case, it kind of sounds like it's a similar thing, but it almost sounds like it comes from a place of gratitude, that you recognize the value. It sounds like, as much as, you know, maybe people give you a hard time, that, it sounds like you and Ali enjoyed and valued and really remember that experience as a positive thing, and that's why you want to give back. That's what it sounds like.
Totally. I mean, it was really like because we had all those pieces, all those positive behavior shaping institutions in our life, that even though we were in the community, it was like a bubble. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those things that we are grateful for, being amongst that chaos, having a lot of peace in our lives. And I think not only is it the fact that we're grateful while we're doing the work, but we also saw our friends that we grew up with in our community suffering because they weren't offered all these enrichment activities and had these behavior shaping institutions not setting them up for success, but actually setting them up for failure. You know what I mean? So it would be like a disservice if we didn't try to give back and try to show other people ways to kind of empower themselves, whether it be the mindfulness practices, meditation, yoga, or even just like, you know, wood carving or robotics or urban gardening. There's different skills that kind of plant seeds where they might get interested in something, which might lead to a career or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, definitely there's a lot of, in so many different, I guess, professions, people talk about kind of moving ways of meditation. You know, so people talk about like running as like a form of meditation. Obviously, a lot of people from whoever, Oprah or whoever, will talk about how like meditation is so important. And I think most people probably know that or they believe it, that like meditation is important. But to have it, I think one, there's a feeling that it's going to be this big commitment or this discipline that like, oh, you know, I don't have time for that or I'm not into that kind of thing. But I think part of the challenge is that people don't know how to integrate it into their life. Mm-hmm. And even though they know that it would be beneficial for them, I think we don't always have, just in general, all of us, we may not always have good examples of how, what that looks like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I think the moving itself, and there's a guy out in LA that I've trained with, and he talks about, you know, Kali is the martial art. So he has kind of a thing that he calls cognitive Kali. Mm-hmm. And he's done a bunch of research with, you know, neurologists and mm-hmm. neuroscientists, and they'll look at like brain activity and stuff. And his whole thing is, you know, in our society today, people get prescriptions for medications for like ADHD or high blood pressure, hypertension, whatever. Mm-hmm. And if people just incorporated movement, whether it was, you know, a martial art for the discipline mm-hmm. or meditation to relax and ease their, you know, hypertension, mm-hmm. that, you know, he posited that, what if we could have a world with like movement prescriptions rather than just like, you know, pharmaceuticals, that you got a prescription for like whatever, meditation daily or twice a day, 15 minutes, you know, whatever it would be. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of value in that.
Definitely. I think that that's one of the misconceptions of meditation, that, you know, that you have to have a certain amount of time carved out of your day, like a long duration. Where, like, honestly, sometimes, you know, I may wake up in the morning time and just meditate for, like, 3 minutes, go inside of myself. But it's all about the technique that you mm-hmm. use. You know, it's different techniques. If you have a long duration of time where you can sit down, you can go into, like, a long guided meditation.
Yeah.
But if not, you know, there are real short meditations that you can do that can kind of take you inside. But one of the other reasons why most people kind of stay away from meditation is because, like, you know, people love the instant gratification of, like, the yoga, the bending and stretching, because you feel the benefits. Sometimes meditation, people stop because they can't still their mind. Their mind is restless and running around like a drunk monkey on LSD. That's what people say. And it's really, there's certain meditations that can kind of help you get into your meditations better. Like there's a meditation that we teach called the Next Thought Meditation, which teaches you how to watch the thoughts that are going through your mind, and then how to slow your mind down, which is perfect to do before you get into any meditation, because mm-hmm. it'll help you kind of still your mind, so you can actually, instead of just reflect, sitting there in silence and reflecting on your day, you can actually withdraw your senses and go inside yourself, that's what meditation mm-hmm. is about.
Almost like a warm-up. Mm-hmm. Kind of warm up your mind.
Totally. Or warm down your mind.
Yeah, yeah. So, how do you... I'm sure, especially when you guys were beginning, I mean, it's awesome to see, because, like, you know, you guys have offices and, you know what I mean? Like, you guys are really doing it in a legit way. That's a real way. It's provided, like, a, you know, career for you guys. You guys have gotten some attention. But especially in the beginning, when you guys were starting, mm-hmm. how did you even get people to, like, buy into? I'm fairly sure, as much as I think that I'm open to this stuff, mm-hmm. if 20 years ago you would have been like, hey, Joe, let's do some like meditation, I probably wouldn't have like blown you off, but I would have been like, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure if I have the time. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you even get this all started? How did you convince people to do it?
Well, I mean, I think one of the main things that sold us on the practice was our personal journey on the practice. Like, we graduated from school, you know, we had our graduation money, so we didn't have to rush out there and get a job. And, you know, we were humble dudes, and we were really into reading, camping, and doing yoga, meditation, and stuff like that, all those esoteric type things. Yeah. And then we saw what it did to us, how it strengthened us mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. And we're like, man, everybody needs this. So that's what kind of gave us the idea that we needed to start sharing the practice and how it can help. You know, even if you're living amongst the chaos, to get that inner peace inside of you to kind of deal with that outer chaos. But in regards to people buying into it, it wasn't until a gentleman who was on our board, like a older brother, confidant, who is world-renowned for SEL, for social-emotional learning, and known for the PASS program, promoting alternative thinking strategies that's implemented all over the world. And my mom was working for him and kept telling him about, you know, what we were doing, how we were volunteering our time, teaching kids yoga and stuff like that, and where what neighborhood the kids were from. So he finally decided to come check us out. And he's like a doctor from Penn State, professor from Penn State. And, you know, he came down, and a researcher also. So he came down, took us out to lunch, and, you know, he found out we were like genuine dudes about our mission. And, you know, then he said, well, would you mind if I come to your neighborhood and see, you know, the kids that y'all work with? And he came, and you know how researchers do, they're just, he's just observing everything that's going on outside. And these kids are cussing, punching each other, using like all types of profanity, damaging property. Wow, they're wilding out. Mm-hmm. And then, and it, because he was definitely like, look, don't tell them who I am, just let me just observe. And then we went up, he wanted to check the after school program out. So yeah, we went to the after school program, and it was held at the Druid Hill YMCA at the time. And it was time for like the yoga mindfulness practices. And he went up and he sat down, rolled his mat out. And the kid that had been cussing and fussing and beating people up the most, who was suffered from lead paint poisoning, he was a kid that sat next to him and, you know, told him, like, man, you have to sit with your back, neck, and head aligned, all the breathing in and out through your nose, and basically instructed him on how to do all these practices. And he saw the fact that, like, man, the kid may not practice every day, but it's a tool that he has, and he really understands it, where it can transform not only his life, but people in his family, community, and stuff like that. And he was just completely blown away. And he was like, man, what do you all need? And we're like, man, honestly, every time we go for a grant, we don't have any studies saying that our stuff works. So if we could get a study going, that would help us get some funding. So he partners with Johns Hopkins, because he's really good friends with a gentleman named Phil Leaf, who's also like a confidant, mm-hmm. and from the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And then we got two researchers to come in and observe the kids once again, Dr. Tamara Mendelson and Laura, I forgot her last name, and they were blown away too, and they were excited about doing the study. So we did the first randomized control study on the effectiveness of yoga and mindfulness on urban youth, mm-hmm. and it got great results. It was published in the Journal of Abnormal Psychology.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And then they also did a issue brief also that can kind of break down what the findings were in layman's terms. So from there, you know, it went from us trying to sell our programs to principals, like begging, mm-hmm. to us walking in there with the Johns Hopkins issue brief, telling them, you know, that we have something in a scientific journal article published, and, you know, the green light was open. You know, we had the data to back, you know, what thousands of years of practice, mm-hmm. has shown, but, you know, it's actually modern day research proving that these practices work.
That's crazy. You know, first, that's incredible that happened. I think it also speaks to a lot of the bias that maybe modern education and our like kind of systems have, where, I mean, people have been doing acupuncture for like thousands of years, yoga for thousands of years. You guys have been doing it literally since you were kids. And then, you know, not to take anything away from them, but some researchers from some university come, study you guys, publish it, and all of a sudden, oh, now this is something good and valuable.
Totally.
When you were first going to like schools, like, I can't even imagine, like, these principals, were you guys just like walking in and being like,
sure, come on, let me come in.
Where's your cell phone?
I think it's on my...
Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the even response to you, like, in the very beginning? Were you guys just like, hey, we'd like to do some yoga with your kids after school?
At first, they didn't really care what the program was. They were just excited about having positive people of color role models in their school, male, yeah, role models, because it's, yeah, like, few and far between.
Yeah, that's true.
But, and then, like you said, like, it was like 16 years ago when we first started, so yoga and mindfulness and meditation wasn't as pop culture mm-hmm. as it is now. So they didn't really know what it was. They thought they called it like yogurt or like Yoda, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, they definitely were. They at first, yeah, they definitely didn't know what exactly it was we were doing. Mm-hmm. But that was our first opportunity. But from there, we trained. Our whole model was reciprocal teaching, where we all of our students learn how to teach the practices and mm-hmm. the benefits of the practices and stuff like that. So we got an opportunity to, I guess, do a, not a performance, but I guess just show people at this after school institute what our program is about. And instead of talking to them, we just had our kids lead each other through the sunrise. And they were blown away by the discipline that the kids showed to be able to do that, listening to their peers. And, mm-hmm. you know, so from there, I guess a ball started rolling, and, you know, that we people started calling us instead of us having a knock on the door.
That's awesome. You know, one of my teachers, Guru Dan, he will always quote Aristotle. And I don't know the exact quote, but, mm-hmm. you know, he will always say that the highest form of learning is to teach. Mm-hmm. And not only just as a teacher, like if you want to grow and be like a yoga teacher or martial arts teacher, you should teach. But if you really want to learn something and, you know, install it and have it in your body, mm-hmm. you have to teach it. The other thing that he talks about is the benefit of like intentional slow movement. That people think of martial arts and they want to go fast and strong. This whatever, say Bruce. And he was best friends with Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. But there's so much value in doing things in a controlled, slow way, where you really have like full control of what your body is doing, mm-hmm. what the movement is, what the thought is combined with it. So it's a very cool thing to hear so many parallels that overlap with, you know, even our own martial arts.
Definitely. I mean, when you said that Aristotle quote, it just reminded me of my teacher when we first asked him if he would teach us.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I'll teach you, but I have two rules. One, you know, it's like, In yoga meditation, there's like a God hour where you're supposed to practice like an hour and a half before sunrise. And at that time, it was probably like 4:30 in the morning. So he was like, you know, you got to show up at my house 4:30 in the morning. That's the first rule. And it was a day after, I mean, that night we were drinking with him. So yeah. We're like 4:30 in the morning, man. Like,
yeah.
And then the other rule was, you know, he wanted to create teachers. He's like, he's not, you know, training any devotees or students. He's training teachers just because, you know, just like you said, whatever you put out there, it comes back to you. And if you're like passing on the information that you're learning, then you'll get more information. You know what I mean? So that's definitely the philosophies in line.
Yeah. There's a lot that Guru Dan would say that, you know, at one time he was training a lot of fighters. Mm-hmm. You know, shortly after Bruce Lee died, everyone wanted to be Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. They wanted to like box and do all the things that Bruce Lee did. And he was training a lot of people. He was training people to fight in the ring, you know, sport fight, anything. And one of his teachers said to him, he was like, you know, Dan, if you want to give back to the community, it's fine to build fighters, but you really need to build teachers, because those teachers always give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, it's really amazing how much, you know, things overlap and all these similarities. Do you have kids that started with you back then that you know that are still doing it now? Like maybe they're teaching or they're still like with you guys?
I mean, the coolest thing is that out of that first group of students that we started with 16 years ago, I would say maybe 8 of them are our current staff.
Oh, man.
And senior staff. And I know all of them still have their own personal practice.
Yeah.
And that's one thing we noticed that really wasn't going on, is just that, like, even kids we don't really have too many frequent visits with or interactions with, they still, since it's the whole reciprocal teaching model, they understand and embody it and know what these practices can help them out with situations.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like a life skill that they use. And, yeah, not only do they practice, but, like, you know, most of them come back and teach for us.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, I was thinking about this. I was, you know, periodically I try to look you guys up because I'd be like, man, Ahmed Ali, they're doing all kinds of awesome things in Baltimore City. But you guys are like humble guys. You guys mm-hmm. are like humble dudes. So when you started to get attention, I mean, I didn't look up everything that you guys did, but I know that you guys were on like the Today Show mm-hmm. and something with like Oprah.
Like CNN, yeah. Oprah article.
How was that for you guys? Like now I'm just asking you, like you, I mean, just as a person, like what was that like to get that attention?
I mean, it was surreal just because like once we did get all that attention, and then with the Mike article that has, I don't know how many million views.
Oh yeah, the one where,
with the detention and meditation. On, like, yeah, Facebook, yeah. I know we were away on vacation, not on vacation, on a retreat or training, facilitating a training or something. And all of our emails just started getting flooded. Yeah. And, you know, that was one of the biggest things is just that, you know, yeah, man, we got to be a little bit more on point with emails just because before you know it, you can have like 1,000 emails in a day, you know. Yeah. And the other thing that I think that all that stuff changed is like the demand for our programs and the demand for us doing trainings, workshops, and consulting visits. So, you know, our time, while it sucks that we have to travel so much, just because, you know, we have personal relationships and families and stuff like that. Right now, it's kind of helping our organization grow.
Yeah. Where are some of the places that you've been?
Been to Scotland, England, Germany, Austria. That's international.
So how, I mean, when you guys come in, you guys are like guys from Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just right. I mean, I love you guys, so there's no judgment. But you know, how do, I mean, I don't know. I've never been to these places, so I don't even know how the people are over there. But like, are they receptive to you?
Totally. When we were actually in Austria, the headmaster of the school that we were doing a program that looked at us and was like, oh, this isn't going to work. This is not going to work. And, you know, she was like that basically the kids weren't going to listen to us and that it was a waste of money.
Yeah.
And by the end of the week of working with those kids, man, the kids loved us, you know, because we're fun guys. We made it engaged. We kept it engaged. We did the same reciprocal teaching model where we would have them come up and lead their peers through the practices and make everybody clap. So it was exciting. And, and it went so well that the headmaster ended up asking us how much it would cost to keep us over there in Austria. But you know,
like keep you permanently?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But it's... Even with, you know, the language barrier, we had a translator with us. And even though the kids kind of, like, understand a little bit of English, you know, like, yeah, the practices are, you know, universal.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you come from a place of love and laughter and, you know, stuff like that, the kids feel that. They love genuine people. And that's kind of, we come from a genuine place, whoever we're working with, you know what I mean? Whether it's overseas or, you know, people in, like right now, our focus was underprivileged communities and stuff like that, but then we kind of reflected on us going to school with friends and some of our peers and friends and like how they dealt with stuff, but they're not, like they may not have their parents not being in the house because they might be locked up, it might be because they're working all the time, so, you know, the anxiety from that or high performance anxiety and a lot of other ways that, you know, these tools can work. So, yeah, but I don't know where that came from, but yeah, we're definitely, oh yeah, it works there too, from like, you know, the affluent schools to the, you know, Title I schools, you know, it's just all about being genuine, I think.
Well, I mean, especially here in the city, I'm sure you guys have seen some really like tragic and, you know, crazy situations that kids were in.
Definitely. I mean, I remember one time we were teaching at the old Lake Clifton and actually, two different occasions. One occasion, the school was on fire.
Oh my God.
So imagine coming to school and your school was on fire.
Yeah.
And then another time, there was like a dead body on the school steps.
Oh my God. Like right in the front?
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, those are some of the crazy things that I've seen. We're getting like, yeah, it's really sad. I mean, and that's one of the main reasons why we've been trying to work with teachers as of late, like professional developments, because if we're teaching these kids how to like be more mindful and present and stuff like that, and the teachers are using anger to discipline the kids and stuff like that, that's totally combating what we're trying to teach them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing that we've started adjusting is, you know, teaching the teachers too, so, you know, everybody will have these skill sets.
Yeah. Now, have people been reaching? Did people reach out back around the time of like the Baltimore riots and Freddie Gray, or are they reaching out now? Anything related to like Charlottesville?
I mean, people. We were already in a lot of schools, and like the school that was in the epicenter of that Freddie Gray thing. Is the school that's being highlighted on that Mike article for having zero suspensions for the past 3 years. So, you know, we've been in that community. I know some funding was supposed to come from that, but I don't know if they actually did anything with the funding. More and more schools are reaching out to us just because it definitely deals with a lot of the issues that these kids are dealing with growing up in Baltimore and the trauma that they're facing and stuff like that. And now, you know, it's those the neurological studies that's coming out that's, you know, showing the research behind the practices. So it's kind of getting impossible for people to say that, you know, this isn't working.
Oh, yeah. Now, what is the response from, like, I'm sure there must be yoga purists, meditation kind of purists. Are they open with you guys?
Sometimes when we go to retreat centers, people still look at us and ask us if we're the band. Like, really?
Yeah.
And it happened so much that we started running with it, and we told everybody we're a touring Australian band, and that I play the didgeridoo, Holly plays the bull roar, and Andy's on vocals. So, that's yeah. Good. So, but yes, yeah, so, and then it definitely going to those different situations where we stand out just because, you know, we feel like, you know, a chocolate chip in a bowl of milk.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine.
They definitely call you out and like, can you do this pose for this long? Can you do this? And like one time, like there's this breath that expands your lung capacity. I've seen it used in martial arts also. It's called like the breath of fire where you're breathing
fast.
That's right. And you're supposed to do it for 3 minutes and it totally detoxifies your body, purifies your blood and all that stuff. And I was in Madison, Wisconsin teaching, and in the middle of class, I'm trying to teach the students, but the teacher's like, I don't believe you can do it for 3 minutes.
I'm just like, interrupting your session?
Interrupted the session. I was like, well, I'm here for the kids, but I can do it for 3 minutes after class. He's like, no, that's fine. Do it right now. And I'm like, all right. So I did it for 3 minutes. And then to like throw it in her face, you know how it expands your lung capacity. So I held my breath for like a minute and a half while like afterwards. And then the exhale just looked at it like this. But because we look the way we look, people test us and don't think we're authentic and know what we know. But honestly, I don't think we've been around the world, around the nation, and you know, and pass every single test that these people bring to us. So it's like, because we look the way we look, we aren't supposed to know what we know, but we like have some of the best teachers out, you know, and our main teacher definitely told us that you can't treat everybody with the same practices because everybody's body's a little different, with their age is different, you know. So he told us a wide variety of different practices, whether it's yoga, meditation, breathing, Tai Chi, you know, so
awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, kind of wrapping up, what would you like to see, or what is your vision for like the future of what of all of you guys' work?
Honestly, I would love to see these practices being practiced nationwide, worldwide, in every school. Just because these kids learn these tools at a young age, that it'll kind of change people's I guess outlook on life, and still with a level of empathy that's lacking in the school system. Then also having alternative suspension rooms in all schools, because suspension is so punitive, and if you can actually have people reflect on what got them into the room, how they could have handled it differently, and intertwining breathing exercises, meditation, and a little bit of tea, like that can really resolve a lot of conflicts. It'll take the commotion out of class, and you know, get the kids redirected and not really take away any teaching time from the teachers. So I mean, all in all, I mean, I'm really big into school just because it's one of the behavior shaping institutions that's been failing, you know, inner cities public schools, especially in Baltimore, forever. Know what I mean? So if those two things happen, I think that, you know, we definitely want to open up our own school also, like a boarding school, like outside of Baltimore, where kids, you know, who are in horrible situations can go out there, like elementary, like a mid, like I think we're connecting with one of the principals of the schools that we're in right now to kind of like get the vision down.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to try to do it 4th through 12th grade.
Great.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah. But that, I don't think... I think worldwide is a little off. I think district-wide, as far as us having programs, like, we're about to have something district-wide in Dorchester County.
Uh-huh.
Like, and hopefully, you know, Baltimore City will follow suit.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you guys are, like, homegrown. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you talk, I'm just out of my curiosity. Seems like it's been super effective in schools with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You think it would be effective in like a correctional system?
We're actually in both juvenile correctional facilities at Baby Bookings, and I think it's called the Waxter Center.
Yeah.
And we'll see. I mean, we're doing a study on it, but you know, I would think that people who are confined to a certain area would have to benefit from these practices.
Yeah.
And you know, they would have nothing but to be able to practice.
Well, I mean, the thing too is that there's a lot of people who went into prison as you know, tough, bad dudes,
mm-hmm.
and came out like very wise, you know, definitely evolved versions of themselves.
Totally.
You know, like completely different people that came out that went in,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like whether it was religion or connection, whatever it is that people found, you know, even individually, they've been able, some people have been able to do it. And
mm-hmm.
if you have like a network of people like teachers and guides, you know, I think, I don't know, it definitely seems like the future has a lot of possibilities. And you talk about like people teaching and learning. One of the things I always loved that I heard my teacher Guru Dan talk about was, you know, we call him Guru, and in the Philippines that just means teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a wise, not like a sage or something like
mm-hmm.
people sometimes think of, but he was like, you know, the teacher is just like a guide to help students discover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, you don't teach a child to walk. They learn it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you're there to like help them and support them. But really, you're there so they can discover things and learn things for themselves. And so I see that a lot of, you know, in the work that you guys have done with all the kids that you've worked with. So, you know, again, I just want to thank you for, you know, taking the time. Always impressed, you know, just to... Every time I hear of you guys doing different things, and very inspiring.
Thank you, my brother. And the craziest thing is like, in you know, I think there's a misconception of what Guru is, that it's a sage or what. It is a wise man, but the reason why they say that is breaking down the word Guru. It's like Gu means light, Ru means like removal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's just like removing. I mean, darkness. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's like removing of the darkness. So that's what Guru stands for.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's kind of like it's just a teacher just moving the darkness so you can kind of have your self-discovery.
That's awesome. Well, with that, Amen. Thank you so much.
All right, my brother.
Let me stop this here.